for Townsend Public Workshop now in session. Try and find a seat, Bertram.
Pardon?
Try and find a seat.
All right.
Okay. So have we located all this hardware, or we just kind of, this is just our wish list, or what?
Yeah, what I'd like to do is, the last meeting, we had staff here talking about the capital budget and operating budget. And they listed off some things that they thought would make their life easier. So we've actually put those down here, and then we want to discuss those further. And we actually have some more input from staff. The actual employees that do it. So kind of wanted to talk through where we are with this stuff and get further direction from you all. And want to add one thing to the list, and that would be Quilson permitting for dredging. Because that's coming up on us. If we're going to dredge that marina, we better get started. So anyway, so what I'd like to do is go through these one by one. If you'd like, are there any other ads you thought about over the last 2 weeks?
No, Abigail, the network connection that we have between here and Point Hudson, is that, are we going like out on the internet and then to Point Hudson and back, or is it a fiber connection between here and
I think it's just
there?
Fiber. Yeah.
So I mean, it's like, it's all internal network. Yeah. Between here and there, so we could run cameras on that.
So we just did a test this week, and I'll bring you up to date at Point Hudson and Quilson.
Okay.
Both.
Oh, great.
So the first thing is, you know, we've given Chris $150,000 to do small capital projects, and we have two of them right outside here right now to see what that's like. One is restriping and sealing the parking lot, which I think looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the other is our new kiosk is up and running, so people can pay for launch passes. So we have three categories right now. We can expand that. One is for daily pass, one is for an annual pass, and one is for a box truck buying pass. So when we find somebody that says, I didn't pay my $200 and I don't have any money, we can send them to the kiosk and put a credit card in and get a box pass.
And then they'll get a piece of paper out that says they paid.
Right, mm-hmm. And that goes on their dashboard. Mm-hmm. The $200 annual pass,
the 100.
$100, excuse me. We'll give them a ticket that'll say you have 5 days to redeem this in the mortgage office for a hang tag. It's good for 5 days, take it to the mortgage office and get a hang tag.
Nice.
So we're working through some of the operational issues there, but it's going to be a great matter of fact. We already have our first $10 sale today.
That's right, so today.
It was pretty nice to see.
Really?
Yeah.
Paying for itself.
Yeah. So we want to continue on a program like that. Of $150,000 for those small capital projects that are $10,000, $12,000 that we can get done for that kind of stuff.
So how much was this? You know, you said we gave $150,000 when we did two projects.
Well, we did a lot more than that.
Okay,
so there's two of them that are representative of that.
Right. So
the striking was $17,000 and the kiosk was 12, again?
Probably 13 after the installation.
So those are the kind of things that go in that. And that's not his operating budget. He has another $100,000 for his normal maintenance, just fixing stuff. This is for capital projects that are small that aren't going to be, you know, big projects.
So that sounds like about what we used to always try to give Larry, is about $250,000 a year. And that's what this breaks out to. So why is it broken out into $150,000 and then $100,000?
Because one's capital and one's operating.
Okay.
So we want to keep those together. So again, capital is anything over 5 years or $5,000 that extends the life of the facility. So anyway, so that's that part. We want to continue on that. Now, what you heard from Chris 2 weeks ago was an excavator would be something that he thinks would be good. And we actually did some research. And for $30,000 to $40,000, we can buy an excavator. As we talked with maintenance and yard and staff, both Terry and Chris came to the conclusion that it's probably not a wise investment. We are going to actually rent an excavator for $3,000 a month. And if we can get all of our work done in 1 month for $3,000 a year, it would be better to not maintain a piece of equipment and get all the work done we need to get done. So they did the analysis, and they don't believe that's a wise investment of $30,000 or $40,000, which is great. However, they did come back and said, you know, what we do rent a lot is a man lift. So
is it what?
A man lift. So when we service our, the travel lifts, for instance, we have to oil and grease the shivs, the cables, that all needs some man lift. We were just at Point Hudson this last week cleaning the roofs and trying to get some of the bird guano off the roofs, things like that. So that's important. They think we rent a man lift about 6 times a year, and it's about $2,000. So that's $12,000 a year we're spending on man lift.
So that they rent a man lift, or would they get a man lift or like a bucket truck?
A man lift.
And so that's
it's a driving man lift, because a bucket truck wouldn't get on the grass at Point Hudson very well. It would have some issues. So they feel that one of those movable man lifts, they're big.
It's got to be a pretty big one to get up to the top.
Yeah, we just had it at Point Hudson 2 weeks ago. So anyway, they believe when you look at the numbers of $12,000 a year, and you can buy one for possibly $30,000 and pay for itself in 2 years, that might be a wise investment. So I don't have exact prices, but I think we're going to look into what a man lift would cost.
So you could have a man lift in a trailer to put it on?
No, this is actually self-driving.
I know.
Oh, a trailer to move it from here to there, yes.
Yeah.
So again, we're fleshing these things out, but these are things that staff is really thinking about. What would it cost to maintain it and rent and own it versus renting it? So more will follow on that.
Now, don't we already have some kind of a backhoe or something?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between a backhoe and an excavator?
So a backhoe, once you set it next to a boat, you need to put your four legs down.
Mm-hmm.
So all you can do is this. You can't grab something and put it into a dumpster. A excavator is on tracks. So you grab something and you can actually take it and put it in the dumpster. So it's movable where a backhoe isn't. Once you lift something, you're planted.
Mm-hmm.
So it really,
because a backhoe is digging, and so they need stability to dig,
mm-hmm.
so they have the 4 feet down.
Okay.
Anyway, and it's small. Our backhoe isn't that big,
uh-huh.
but we have a backhoe. Although Terry did remind me that our backhoe is 23 years old. You know, all of our equipment is getting up there.
I'll talk to Chris about it. There is, so Ritchie Brothers does like 2 auctions a year. Iron Planet's another source.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lot of man lifts go through Ritchie Brothers in the March auction. They were really nice man lifts, almost brand new. And $18,000, $20,000.
And then there's James Murphy too.
Yeah.
Well, I think just servicing our travel lifts is so important right now. Make sure, after our failure, we need to be inspecting those things on a monthly basis, really.
Richard, did you have
something? I was talking to Chris. He was saying that you budgeted $60,000 for those meters, and he said he came in at $27,000. So is that more money that he would be able to use then?
Well, no, because we've spent it somewhere else. Other capital things.
There's still checks in the checkbook. So
what size man lift are you talking about?
You know, I think they're looking at a 30-footer, but I'm not exactly sure.
I just tell you from vast experience, you're in a harsh condition here with salt water. We were in a mining condition, and there's a whole lot of interlocks and logic in those things, and that maintenance is expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
I would say if you think you have a budget for maintenance on that, double it.
But you can wire around all those safeties.
Yeah. That's a good point, Carl.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How about travel lift? We talked about a travel lift.
Mm-hmm. We don't feel we need a travel lift. What we need is a travel lift fund.
Okay.
And I think what we need to do this year is come up with a fund that a portion of our yard lift fees goes to fund a replacement. Because the 300 ton is 18
yeah.
years old, 19 years old. I mean, and that's $1.5 million right there. So I think what we need to do is, because that's such a necessity, such a piece of equipment that we really need, we need to fund some kind of replacement for that.
Really should set it up more on how many hours you're on the machine than years. Doesn't really matter in years as much as, you know, 5,000 hours or 10,000 hours or.
So we, well, some things it does. You know, tires rot and hot coals on the hydraulic hoses get old and.
That's true.
So, I mean, you gotta.
Yeah.
Do we make money back on our travel lift, or is it still a marginal business?
I think on the lifts, we probably break even. I don't think we make money on it.
Well, if in the 18 years we've had it, we have, and we had that 3%, whatever it was, did we ever collect enough to pay for a travel lift?
No.
See, I don't think we'll ever pay for it. So it's just cost of doing business.
Yeah. So the fund needs to be funded on the books as just a future capital investment.
The same is true with the yard trailer. We all think the yard trailer would be really a great idea. We did call Kendrick Machinery, which is Marine Travel Lift. We're looking at about $450,000 for something that would do a 100-ton boat. When we realized that what we really need is more moving 200-ton boats around, not 100-ton boats around, because of the 300-ton is so wide, that's where we lose efficiencies. It's hard to make those numbers work. We're not going to be gaining any efficiencies because most people don't want their boats a foot apart. Most people need room to work. So when you look at, can we get three or four more boats in the yard? Probably, but does that can ever pay for a $450,000 piece of machinery? So again, staff looked at that, they did the numbers, and they don't know the yard trailer would be good. What I did ask them to do is, why don't you contact Gus? And I had heard Gus wanted to sell his trailer. If we could buy Gus's trailer, rebuild the hydraulics on it, and use it just to move boats around at a reduced cost, it might make sense. Gus is not interested in selling his trailer. So I told Terry, just keep an open mind, and if you find something in the $50,000 range, it might make sense for us to do that. But for $500,000, it just doesn't make sense to gain efficiencies with a trailer.
You ever see those on those auctions?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yeah. They're hard to find. And when they're out there, they get snatched up pretty quickly.
Well, you have, every yard has one of them or something, or two of them, and not like a commodity, exactly.
How about,
what was that?
Yeah, what's in there?
Kombucha from the farmer's market. Did Jay Anderson still have a trailer when he passed away?
I believe he did, but it wasn't a hydraulic trailer.
Okay.
Yeah. We really need a hydraulic trailer that can do, you know, 6-foot draft sailboats and power boats.
And why not just, why wouldn't we just use, and I was thinking, another way to look at it is you could set somebody up in business and say, look, we're going to do this many boats a year, so they can run a spreadsheet, and you know, I'm sure there's a business there to be had. Gus is sitting there. Mm-hmm.
Gus has actually said he'd like to be a contractor. Mm-hmm. The issue is our yard isn't totally full, so it's really hard to tell people we're going to need you to move these boats because we still have space even in, you know, it's the busy season.
Right.
Where we don't have space, the shipyard. And those boats are tougher to move.
Yeah.
But they also have a lot of people working around them, so it's not exactly that you're going to stack them closer, it's just going to be easier to rearrange boats.
Right. Now, if we were operating an indoor storage area, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, if we wanted to store boats indoors, we could tight pack them in there for the winter. That would actually be a great business. But we don't have a building that big.
Okay.
Cameras, although it's really not a capital expense because cameras have gotten so cheap right now, I wanted to bring it to your attention what we're doing. I tasked our IT people with doing tests in both Point Hudson and Quilson. And they've actually done a really great job of putting together our network. Our network's pretty good. And Zach showed me Point Hudson and Quilson now. He's just got the cameras in the window. but we get great images. As a matter of fact, I can't do it right now, but he could set up my phone where I could look at Quilcene Ramp and let me and know whether there's people using the ramp. So I think, what are we talking, capital expenditure, like $1,200 total for 10 cameras?
Yeah.
So if we did two in Quilcene, two in Point Hudson, and six here for $1,200, what would that be?
100, now these are real cameras, they're not like record jack.
No, it's 4K cameras.
So we're, there was one time some talk about
We do.
Wanting
this
to have
additional.
Cameras on, was it City Dock or one of those?
Mm-hmm. We don't have a network on City Dock or Union Wharf. So we'd have to figure out a network situation. The city has network both in the Pope Marine Building and in right there at the corner of Union Wharf. And we might be able to work a deal with the city where we could use their network.
In the apartments?
No, it's on the other side. It's over on where the surf was. Yeah. And I don't know why the city has, it's a security camera of some kind. So anyway, that's a possibility, but I think I'm actually thinking of just moving forward for $1,200 and just starting getting those cameras installed so we have them ASAP.
Would that be somebody, something that our security person would monitor or?
They could. I don't know what the infrared capabilities or the night vision capabilities of them are, but it might be good enough to see.
Usually the infrared illuminators are good for about 8 feet. Trying to look across the parking lot. It's not so really hot.
Isn't there a cost though? Isn't there a cost though to you, does that go to a central thing where people can view them all, or is that just the isolated cameras?
It goes online, so it's in the cloud.
Oh, I see.
So it all goes to the cloud and you have to have a password to access that account. Okay. We have three of them now. We have one here, one over in the restroom. Actually we have two right here. Here, one of
outside the restroom, he means.
Outside the restroom. But we can monitor all the time. Matter of fact, in Moorage, they have their screen set up where they can see the boat ramp to know if somebody's down on the boat ramp.
So the security guy would have to phone in each one, or we could have a panel?
You can. It's a panel. So it comes up all three of them, and you click on one, and it zooms in to make it bigger. And then you can zoom from there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice system. And it's amazing what the technology has done. Mm-hmm.
And it's all recorded, so you can go back.
Yeah.
So is the resolution good enough that you can get license numbered?
We haven't tested that yet. I mean, the ones we got here is not.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at it, and depending on the lighting conditions, it gets pretty blurry.
It would be pretty slick to have one at each of the gates in the yard, work yard and jump yard, so that if you lose your crops some night, you could go back and look at all the different plates that came out of the gates.
Yeah, the yard, we really need to cover the yard. That's why I'm thinking six for Bodine.
Yeah.
Just so we can cover the yard.
I would think cameras are really useful, but, you know, it's $10 for $1,200. I think we maybe up our game a little bit, maybe get a higher resolution one that's able to actually, you know, get a resolution for reading a license plate.
Well, we can do some checking, but these are 4K cameras, so they're pretty high resolution, so.
Yeah, the problem is, if you get a camera that has a zoom lens, a lens, then you can look at things like license plates. If you do the electronic zoom, which is you take a 4K image and you just blow it up until you've only got a few pixels in the middle, then it just gets fuzzier and fuzzier and fuzzier.
That's what I was thinking about getting a regular higher resolution camera, one that has a zoom lens, a real one.
Yeah, BTZ camera.
So we'll continue working on that. Zach's really excited about doing this. That's really up his alley. Electricity meters in the boatyard, there are a couple options we have. I went with Chris and we inventoried the 47 boxes we have. We have 110 plugs and 47 boxes. So the options we have are getting ones that actually go inside the box. That has some issues with it because you have to power them, but those rings seem to work. Or we can get new pedestals and just have meters on them. All the new pedestals come with Wi-Fi, and they're not Wi-Fi meters, they're some kind of network meter that you tie into. The pedestal price is expensive. They're $1,200 a piece for a pedestal. And if we need 46 or 47 of them, then we're looking at a lot of money. So $50,000, $60,000. I think that we should start with the meters, the small meters that go in the box. There's only about 10 boxes out here that need to be replaced. Our fence line, the boxes are fine. It's really just this set of boxes here on the water side that really need replacing. So I think we can do an interim of getting these meters. And I called you in. I can't remember how much they were, but they were some ridiculous, like $99 a piece or something for those meters.
What kind of cell? I haven't seen them.
They're inductive, fairly inexpensive. They go to a central location.
Okay.
So they send the information to a central location. The thing that I'm finding is the meters don't tend to be zeroable. So even if they go to a central location, somebody's got a log.
A start number. And the end number.
It'd be great to be able to just push zero and reset, but they don't let you do that for some reason. At least I haven't found one that does that. Chris is looking into that. We are also looking at the capability of locking outlets. We don't want to lock the boxes. That's an easy fix. We can put a padlock on it. But if one person has the boot plugged in and blows a breaker, you can't set the breaker again. So Sean is looking at ways we can get caps for the plugs that are lockable. So the boat goes in, you have this spot, you have lock it and say, this is your plug, and it's metered.
So, wait, I'm lost. What are we trying to lock the actual plug-in?
Plug-in.
So that you can only use it so that your cord gets locked into the outlet?
No. So it gives you an outlet you can plug into.
And everything else is locked?
Everything else is locked.
Okay, so you can't just go around the inductive meter, okay.
So we're still working on that. More to follow. I don't have all the numbers, but I think we're on the right track. That probably for about $10,000 we can do the whole thing. Going down to the next one, which is new electrical pedestals. I just don't think we need the investment right now. Looking at the boxes we have, I think they're fine. To spend $1,200 on a pedestal, this doesn't make sense.
But you said there was 12, that's about 10 of them that are...
Yeah, but they're just regular.
Yeah, they can't be very good. Just 10 or 14 of them together, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Sean is recommending that we go to the fiberglass box or whatever now instead of the metal boxes, because they don't rust.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we plugged the Glacier in the other day, and nobody mentioned anything about electricity in the warrant office, and at the end of the day, I need to plug the boat in, so I plugged it in. Nobody knows whether you're plugged in or not at the moment.
So October 1st, it all changes.
Right.
So the commission voted on that. So October 1, we'll be charging for electricity.
Well, my point is that having the plugs metered and, you know, not even telling the customer that the plug is metered, just, you know, so I'm going to walk into the moorage office when the boat is launched tomorrow and I'll get a bill, go through it and pay the bill. And I think it'll be a really easy way to just meter out the electricity and get it paid for. And your customers won't be, I gotta pay this and I'm not gonna use it, or I'm only gonna, really, I think we're on the right track from a customer.
Okay.
So the next thing we've talked about for a long time is a mortgage office. The people that work there, especially in the summertime, are crammed in there like sardines. And we need to come up with another plan. Obviously, had I known when I started in September, I would have put Morage back in this office. But it had already been rented, so there was not much I could do. So I think we need to come up with a plan on how we can have Morage in the yard survive in there with limited space. Chris and Dave's our carpenter, think they could build one for about, it's going to be $100,000. I think that it might be better if we went to Chehalis and had a double-wide motor home, gutted inside, just the exterior, and then come in and build the inside on the suit.
Or more of a double-wide classroom. They're already empty inside. Right.
mean, they can roll one of those in here pretty easily. But I think we need to be thinking about it from a capital expenditure point of view, because it's not only how we service our customers, it's how we treat our employees. Because it's hot, it's muggy, they're stacked on top of each other. They really can't be productive. And TJ and Terry really are crammed in one little...
I was just in there, it's like a sweatshop.
Yeah. So...
a portable building that's down by the...
Yeah, what's going to happen to the radio building when you guys move out to the fort? That's a portable building, isn't it?
It's going to move out to the transmitter site.
So
yeah, that's part of the classroom. Those part of the classrooms are available surplus too. I mean,
there's a bunch of them that just got surplus at the Grant Street School. I don't know where they are. Did they just squish them? Sell them?
Aren't most of them rented? Most of the classrooms they rent or lease.
You know, the nicest buildings are the military surplus, all their portable buildings. They're beautiful.
Pam, did you?
What is the Rubicon lease
term?
What is the Rubicon lease term?
So it's a 1-year term, but he's got 3 1-year options. So he's going to be there for at least 4 years if he wants to.
Do you have any read on that?
I was in there yesterday and he's very busy. Okay. You know, he's got a lot of listings and businesses really looking up for him, which I'm ecstatic about. Okay. I think that's great.
And what about this building? The option to use this building?
Then what would we do with commission?
We'd have to look at some options. There's the marina room, there's the yacht club for having commissioner meetings. But this is could be a nice space.
What about the conference room and the administrative office? Could that be converted to a mortgage office?
We talked about that too. And that's certainly an option.
Because we also don't know what's going to happen with the Coast Guard facility.
Right.
And it seems like there are a lot of moving pieces right now.
Bertrand?
Yeah, I agree. I think it sends a bad message when we have so many financial pressures to build something that's not going to really earn any money. And as Gwen intimated, that's a very large building over there. And there's a lot of space in there.
Which building?
The administration building.
Oh.
And somehow utilizing that, number one, you're not spending a great deal of money, which gives a good message to people because it's not earning you any money. And the second thing is that you're taking away valuable space around there, the facility by which is valuable in the yard itself. So trying to figure out.
And a conference room is not terribly big. It's like a 12 by 12 room or something.
True, but I mean, it's a large space. I mean, the entrance where Sue used to work could certainly accommodate a lot of mortgage business and take the pressure off the yard for that building. Secondly, if you follow the next thing, which is to improve the reservation business, you may not need so many employees in the summer, and you may be able to take some of the burden out of that whole facility. So being judicious and not spending money on something that's not going to earn you any money seems like it would be a very good message, and the opposite wouldn't be.
Yeah, I can't imagine we're at the end of this planning on this.
No,
yeah.
Not at all.
So I think that the mortgage office is located perfectly for a yard office because it's right in the yard. So if it was just a yard office like it used to be, that would be plenty big, wouldn't it?
Yes.
So then, to me, whenever somebody's wandering around the place looking lost, where's the mortgage office at? You know,
they think this building is a mortgage office. It's always leave that back door open.
Logically, the place that they would think of would be the administration building. This is a big, officious-looking building that you can see the biggest, you know. And so I would think that, you know, the conference room downstairs, we have more than just the conference room because there's that big area that gets used by Zach when he comes. You know, that's a pretty good-sized area where Donna and Gene are. You know, there's a lot of room for Donna and Gene, but there's a whole other. So there's a lot of room down on that first floor that could be turned into a mortgage office, which is where people want to go anyway. That's what they gravitate to. And then, like, when I use the conference room in there, it's usually just two or three people talking, which we could use the one upstairs, the conference room there.
Sorry, I agree with you. Remember, we have environmental and security upstairs now in Greg's old office. So we don't really have a conference, there's a table up there, but it's really their office.
Environmental and security.
They use Greg's office now.
I've never seen anybody in there.
Environmental is usually out and about, and security is at night.
But anyway, I think those are all good ideas, and we've talked about it. I mean, we talked about it in November, December, doing just that. So it's not as easy as just, oh, let's move the mortgage office there, because all those walls are structural, and we'd have to rip walls down and start putting counters in, and I worry that there's only one entrance for accounting to get in, so I don't know how accounting would get there. So all things that can be worked out, but it's not just, let's move customer service to the admin building.
So,
and I think there's been some benefit too to having mortgage and yard together from customer service perspective. So.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that really is a key thing from a building owner's perspective, is if you're doing haul out, going in or out, and you're not from here, and you gotta figure out where you're gonna go, and you need to spend the night, and it's a lot.
It's a one-stop shop.
Yeah, but if we're actually looking at a building, I would look real hard at, like, a used classroom and let the guys work on finished carpentry inside, rather than, you know, starting with a shell.
Obviously, a lot more discussion on that.
Yeah.
Just know where staff's kind of thinking.
No, we did a temporary shelter or a fourth room water for the Maritime Center. And it was a great experience. We were in that building for 3 years and bought the building from that, you know, office place in South Seattle and sold it to them for almost the same price. It was like a $200 difference. So, I mean, literally, we lived in that building for 3 years for $200.
Wow.
Yeah. Worked great. Wired it up, put it on block. I mean, never even took the wheels off. Just.
Wow. Build
a skirt around it,
moment's notice,
and build a deck on it, put a nice yellow cedar deck on the front, and we were in business in days, literally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's easy to do.
Reservation system, are we back on that tact, or are we?
We've got to. I mean, our future is online reservations. We've got to figure out how to crack that nut, where we can do online reservations and have an interface to our accounting system. And that's always the stumbling block. People do online reservations, but to do that, we would have to re-enter everything, so it'd almost be double the work.
Last time Abigail and I talked about this, it was like the interface between our existing systems and all of the new marina management systems are kind of like this. So you either have to end up having to take, you know, like get, you know, printouts or output from one system and then put it in the other system, or, you know,
I can't imagine some guy like Bob Weiss doesn't have this nailed.
Well, he doesn't have a system like we have. I mean, we have five different things we're trying to do. You know, Bob runs a marina. Pretty simple,
right?
But we have a yard, and we've got all the other things that we do, plus running a government and being accountable to the government, and so it's a whole different animal. And I wish I could say.
But what product are you trying to sell online? You're not trying to sell a haul out online or yard storage.
Why not?
Why not? You know, when we look to.
You got to have scheduling. I mean, that's kind of a really fluid.
It's no different than renting a slip at 20 bucks. Got to be scheduled.
And it should be integrated with the system. So if you're real-time looking online, you want to know that those are what's available and not have to call them the next day and say, yeah, you wanted this? Well, it's not available. How about the next day? And then you're back to the same thing.
You could say, I have a 50-foot boat and I want to be hauled out. When can I be hauled out? And book it. Book the time. Pay for it. So we're just not there, and we keep hitting this wall every time we try it.
So the wall is?
Can't find a product that will interface everything.
Well, I think we need to not find a product, we need to find a guy. And the guy that used to do this for auto shops back when, in the prehistoric days, when nobody had computers. He just built his own software and sold it to each individual shop. Said, now, what do you want me to do here? And they'd tell him, and he'd do it. And I'm sure he's not doing it anymore, but I imagine there's lots of guys now that this is more evolved that could actually say, well, what do you want to do? And, you know, you build basically a program for what you want to do.
Custom system.
Yeah. We looked at that last year. We talked about, you know, we use a system that's kind of off the shelf, and then the company modifies it to what you need it to be. They take a percentage of money that rolls through it, and that's how they make their money. It works great. We actually wanted, and it goes right into QuickBooks. I mean, it's perfectly interfaced with Authorize.net and QuickBooks and all that. But we wanted to customize it. We looked at doing, you know, whether you're going to do an online off-the-shelf thing or a custom. It was six, half one to a dozen. I mean, there was a cost to doing the custom, but we ended up staying with the shelf. But you can go either way. I mean, there's lots of talent out there to do a custom system. It kind of works out to whether you want to spend the money up front for custom or what do you want to pay for it on the go with off-the-shelf. It's kind of funny.
And one of the struggles we always come up with is if somebody's in the office booking a reservation at the same time somebody's at home trying to book that script. Keeping inventory fresh so we know. And we've even thought about no reservations can be made here. They all have to be made at a call center. And the only thing that's done here is same-day reservations. So you come in today, I'll book you. But if you want time 2 weeks from now, you got to call the call center.
Well, or a customer service rep that you're talking to
right.
can do it through the call center.
I mean, if it's done, and if you're actually using computers, you can do record locks for those things. You don't have to worry about the current to fret over those conflicts. You just need to structure your workflow so that you pick a slip, it locks that slip until the transaction's done, and doesn't let anybody else pick it unless you give it up. But I mean, that's fairly common. Be able to have multiple users using a single database is a fairly common thing in database technology, so I couldn't imagine that it would become a conflict.
Well, we'll continue that quest.
Yeah, but I think what we're looking for is not a program, but a guy that can actually make the program fit us. And, you know, we get all those, and I'm sure you guys get them like me, an email a day from somebody saying, well, maybe make your website work and bring it, you know, I'm sure there's guys that do that only for the kind of program we want. They just aren't out dropping by any door down, which is not as many of them.
The guy that wrote the garage software probably owned a garage. And
he did.
And understood the business. If you get your average run-of-the-mill, you know, programmer, you need to teach him the marine trade business before you end up essentially not spending all your time with them while he's developing it.
There's got to be comparables in like other campground software and stuff like that, where they can say, "Oh yeah, I just did this campground. That's kind of like what you've got."
I think RV. I actually think the RV model is probably better than the boat model, because there's a lot of people that do RV software.
Mm-hmm. In it, I mean, one thing here. From a capital expense point of view, I mean, you've got it on this list, so what is your thinking on that? Or it's on the list, so are you thinking you want to spend money on it next year? And how much money do you want to spend on it?
What was the last system?
Last time we budgeted 50. Yeah.
Budgeted what?
50,000. Yeah. We didn't go with that system, and it just didn't work. But
the interesting, and you know, I think, probably see a pretty quick payoff in less labor, in the ability to control your inventory. You know, if something's filling and whoever's running, it's just like Ashley, I mean, if we are blocking stuff and move, you know, we can block out what's available all the time. That's how we do it, and it's just really slick.
So who does your system?
Well, that's a you know, that's kind of a tourism system, Zola, it's called Zola, X-O-L-A, but my point is, having a system in place, you know, I don't know that you'll need a huge mortgage office, because you'll be able to, you know, kind of control, like if the 35-foot slips are filling up, you can slow them down, you can block out certain dates if you want, if you've got a yacht club showing up, you can block out Point Hudson, too, things like that.
Right. Yeah. Actually, Zola might not be too far off. I mean, it's a tourism thing. We don't need reservations for a permanent mortgage. Maybe we don't need it for the yard, but we need it for RVs and boats and Point Hudson. That's where we're struggling, and that's where we get the hundreds and hundreds of calls on a weekly basis.
That's where it takes all your customer time, too, your customer service time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we could have something like that where we could just upload an electronic file to our current system so we'd automatically integrate, that would be...
Can you have Ashley send me a contact or something just to talk?
Yeah. Then if you really wanted to have more agents, people who didn't really need to face customers but needed to manage, manage reservations and things like that, help people make reservations. Those people could be anywhere, and they wouldn't have to be in a convenient to the customer location.
Well, and even at night, we'll get whoever, when we spread it out, but you'll get 20, 30 phone calls maybe in a night, people having a question. And sometimes we'll just fake that we're the answering service. We'll say, well, we're just the answering service, but you can go online and make a reservation, and they always do. I mean, you don't have to do anything for them anymore, because you just say, just go online, and that'll answer your question and call over.
So with that, our new website is just about done. We're 98% there anyway. And we know that we want to have a component on that website that's going to be online reservations.
Yeah. Going to be what?
There'll be an online component there'll be a placeholder for it. You know, register here. But we won't do that, of course, until we have a system. But we want to make sure our website is workable for that purpose.
So do you think a $15,000 number is the right number to kind of vote?
It might still be a good number.
Boy, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I would think so too. Because it's not, to me, what that guy did was magic, and he was like $5,000. It was a long time ago. But he just did anything he wanted. And since this is not like reinventing the wheel, it's reservations that are made online for lots of things. You go online, or every campsite has online reservations. I can't see that it's going to be that hard to do.
Well, and when we were talking about 50,000, we were talking about getting a whole new marina software.
And we're not
going
to be
looking at
that.
It wasn't just the component of online reservations. Mm-hmm. That would be certainly less.
You should go down and have Ashley demo that for you.
Yeah.
I guess I would encourage to really spend some time architecting this to make sure that you know what you want to buy before you go out to buy it, instead of getting kind of like steered by the salespeople.
Well, and last time we got together, which was before the season, and we had made the decision that the FSM was not going to work for us. We decided that we were going to get back together after season, so probably in October. And Christian has been taking a lead on, keeping track of all the needs of the port, so that we have, a list of everything.
Yeah. If you could make a really good request for a quote, then you can turn it into you can make that request for a quote part of a contract. You can go up to multiple vendors or contractors to write this stuff, and you've got something to hang your hat on. If you don't do that, then you kind of get a suite of stuff from, and it's hard to compare them. You've got three people that want to sell you their thing.
Right.
So.
Yep.
So what is foam tree referring to?
So we actually do that now, where we can forward, or not forward, Michelle and Wilson, when she comes in, can actually check the messages for Point Hudson in the morning she gets in, and she can actually call back and make reservations, because we have a full system there. So we're actually talking about a new phone system, because our phone system is 10 years old, and it, as you know, it needs some help. We're having some phone issues. This phone system that we want, one of the specs is going to be a phone tree, where if Point Hudson's busy, it automatically knows to send it on Tuesdays to Quilcene or to Bowhaven, and does that automatically, rather than sitting there giving somebody a message only, or just ringing forever. So we really set up a phone tree that we can kind of manage.
So is this something that's going to be different hardware, different carrier and all that kind of stuff? Because I remember we spent a lot of money going to this, because Chris said that it would work forever. I mean, it'd be changeable, it'd be upgradable forever. So we decided that that's not accurate?
Well, you know, it's like Steve Jobs saying you only need 256K to, or I guess Bill Gates said that. Technology changes, and Chris, 10 years ago, could not envision this changing. So I mean, this system we bought when we were in the admin building in Point Hudson. So a lot's changed since then.
Is that long ago?
Is that long ago? Those phones were in Point Hudson. Yeah.
Oh. 10 years is not a long time for a phone system.
Because I remember that just getting the hardware was a substantial expense. But you know, you see, he agreed that the environment's going to change, but this will be able to change with it. So we're looking at
Chris will be able to tell you right now. The first thing he wants to do is change our phone system. Abigail and I think we need to go out actually to bid on this. So we're not going to just do a Chris, give us a new phone system. But phones nowadays are really cheap. They're $125 a piece. So the new VoIP phone systems are pretty inexpensive. We're not going to be spending thousands of dollars.
So is there actually a phone switch here, or is it just something that's hooked up to the network?
Yeah, it is hooked up to the network, but it's not VoIP.
And we couldn't have foreseen that 10 years ago.
That's not.
I think it was longer
than 10 years ago. I think so too.
I was a commissioner when we did it, and so I've only been one for 8, so.
Wow.
I remember having to authorize, and I thought, God, that's a lot of phones.
Okay.
Anyway, now the big one, the big ticket item is Quilcene. If we're going to dredge Quilcene, and I think we're going to have to dredge Quilcene, it's a process. Permitting is at least a year, and the latest I've been dealing with the Corps, it might be a year and a half. Does the Commission want us to go into permitting to start dredging Quilcene? It's about $40,000 and at least a year of work.
Well, and the option is to close Quilcene?
Well, no. I mean, you can.
I mean, you're going to have to dredge Quilcene. So
you can get in and out of Quilcene when the tide's above 2 feet.
Yes.
That's pretty
good. I'm just saying, that's not closing Quilcene. But
wow.
If it's zero.
That's worse than the ferries at Keystone.
Yeah.
You just need to move the ramp out of the sandbar.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the permit is about $40,000 and about $250,000 to dredge once we have permits. So, just want to know the path we're going down if we start this. Permits are good for 5 years. So
was that the, and I'm always confused about this, Eric was talking one time about a permit that would let you do maintenance dredging of so many cubic yards.
Yeah. Not as much as we need. Last time we pulled 300 cubic yards out of there, and most maintenance dredges do 10. So, yeah, if you had your own dredge and you wanted to do 10 a year, we'd probably keep it open, but we don't have our own dredge, and mobilizing one is too expensive.
Do we know where we could even take the spoils?
We dump them somewhere.
Really?
And we'll let us dump them, so. But we could dump them up, we could find a place up and probably dump them. Quilcene's a lot easier than Point Hudson.
So we bought that gravel pit next to the airport. We could have put them in there.
I think that That's really a call for what we want to do with Colson in the future.
Well, you know, the dredges, you know, we're not going to be dredging out a huge thing. Guy bought a dredge for using down there in Wachwanchanook, and they do it themselves, and it's not a very big dredge, and he told me it wasn't very expensive. And we're not going to have the Coast Guard sitting here all the time, so we're going to probably end up being on the hook for dredging out the entrance here at Point Hudson. So with free entrances to be dredged, perhaps looking at a maintenance dredging permit and our own dredge might not be that bad of an option to look at down the road. We're sure that the Coast Guard's leaving, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I hear, but I don't know. I think anything can change once the national politics change, if they do change. So, I have not heard anything directly from the Coast Guard that they're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Just rumors.
Okay. So that's $40,000 you do the permit, and what would you say, 200?
250. 2 to 250 for dredging, depending on what they find after they do the survey.
Yeah, well.
It was I think it was 220 when we did it 7 years ago.
Here's a side banger. Do we have a study for doubling the size of Point Hudson and going south towards the mill?
Or even Bodega?
No, not that way.
Have we ever, but it's been talked about.
Yeah, and we've got the report that it's a sandlands breeding beach.
Well, it's a potential sandlands breeding beach.
I know, but I don't think we ever did that. We did the study going out because of floating breakwater.
Which one is it that's in the scheme? Is that
going out? Yeah, it's important to note that they've been doing sandlands egg studies all around, and they've never found any there, and they've done them there. And so it's the type of beach that can support them, but there haven't been any found anywhere around here for a long time. So I think that we would probably pass that, but still, I don't know. I know that they had listed it as an option when I came through to the yacht club, and Bob Sokol was talking about, this is what we can do, we go this way or we go this way. Something that was brought up.
What's the reasoning, Pete? You think there's a demand?
No, yeah, I do. I think there's a demand. And I also think that it would be interesting. I've never seen the plan. Well, I have seen the plan, but it would be interesting to have two entrances so the water can move through the marina. Hmm. And I think there's a lot of environmental benefits to having that happen as far as the tidal movement goes. Mm-hmm.
Just blow a hole in the other end of the, mm-hmm. put a culvert in there too.
So would that be, would take the marina out to about where the railroad bridge was, the railroad trestle?
Depends on how big you wanted to do it, but that's nothing that we're going to be able to think about. I mean, you know, it's interesting, I was talking to, I can't remember who, that Army Corps of Engineers actually built that breakwater, the one, the good-looking mm-hmm. one. And they actually still do build breakwaters. And the reason that you keep hearing, oh, there's no money coming for building infrastructure anymore, is that they put us on their list, and there's so many people on their list that we might see it in 20 years, mm-hmm. you know, 4 years. So that's going to be how people end up doing it themselves. But there could be some other, like the elevated boat ramps are doing. They're doing those elevated boat ramps so the beach sediments can continue to move with the littoral currents and keep the beach healthy. And so there might be some funding to consider doing something like just put a culvert in there to keep the motions of the beaches.
Yeah, I mean,
Now it's blocking up against the side.
I've had a couple of interesting conversations. One was about that, the current moving through the marina. But the other one was, you know, when you look at new boat construction across the country, it's rampant. It's going up. And the industry is doing really, really well. It's like, okay, so we're producing all these boats. Where are they going to go? Who's building new marinas today? You know, there are no new marinas going in. There's not one new marina going in, I think, in the entire Puget Sound. But
there's a reason for that.
Absolutely. And that's my point, that, you know, that at some point it becomes a resource, a precious resource, where the value of the resource goes up because there's just not that many slips around.
But if you have a 30-year payback on a facility that's at sea level now, what is it in 30 years, and how do you plan around that? How do you mitigate sea level changes?
It's easy. When you expand the marina, you take the bridge swales and you put them all around it. I mean,
really?
You know, that's not a bad plot to be able to raise up everything that's down here.
And the boat haven's been raised up once, right?
Yeah, it is. The yard's up 24 inches.
Anyway, got them out.
I can look and see if there's any studies that went that way. I haven't seen them. I know there's a study going out that way.
There was once, I remember that there was some discussion about extending that way. But I would offer that another thing is, if the Coast Guard leaves, there's always the option of removing that island and putting moorage in there.
Yeah.
And that you could take that rock and put it out for the alien jetty.
That big hole up in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it had more moorage space.
Mm-hmm.
We were thinking of putting admin and moorage in the yard out there.
I was thinking of making it an Anthony's home.
Oh, well, I mean, it could make money.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's the point of the resource becoming more precious as we get more boats is, I think, a valid one. I'm not basing that on any solid evidence.
Got to channel through to the Kaitai.
Well, we should ask, what's his name? What is the guy's name? Roberts Richardson, the guy that does the...
Yeah.
Peter Sharpton?
Who?
Peter Sharpton?
No, the guy that does those boat numbers reports for the WPP conferences all the time.
Paul Sorensen.
Sorensen. He'd be the one who does that.
He would be.
Actually, he usually shows up. He might be at our next small ports conference.
Mm-hmm.
Corner him and ask him.
Yep.
So what about doing a footprint and kind of putting together a rough idea of how many boats, what size would fit in there, what kind of return there would be on the alteration?
On removing the spit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to lose the Coast Guard.
Then you can take the building. Put it next to where the dive shop is, or the empty lot, and then you have another piece of real estate.
Mm-hmm. Or take the building where the mortgage office is and stick it along the fence there.
Totally.
So it is. So, now it's full circle. Let's start Quill Scene. We started in Quill Scene and we quickly came back.
Yeah, well, you know, my opinion is that it's a real marina. If you look at the numbers right now, it's doing wonderfully this summer. And people down there, it's the thing that Quilting kind of hangs their hat around. So I think we need to do it. And
you'd like to see that as a capital.
I think we need to.
Yeah, I mean, we had it out 5 years from now, and I can't imagine 5 years from now, it's going to get like a +3 tide to get boats over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's 2021, actually. We had it in 2021.
Even more significant, the dredging is, I think you need to be thinking about the boat ramp.
Yeah,
what's going to happen with that boat ramp? I'm surprised our insurance, how does that work with insurance? I mean, some old boy gets his foot caught in a rock in there and breaks his ankle when he falls over. Does that fall on us?
Sure is.
Yeah. And that would be an endurance payout.
Yeah.
So, I would think the insurance company would be all over that, saying you guys have to clean that up before you have it. No?
They have to visit before they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really need, I just can't believe that we haven't had a boat ramp there all the time we've been talking about this. It's just
a boat ramp accident.
Yeah. I mean, it's been awful down there forever. We've been talking about needing it, and it's never gotten done, and it's still
awful.
Yeah.
Spending lots of money now.
Anything else? That's all I've got. Before we came to this meeting, Abigail pulled me aside and says, we don't have any money, Jim. Just so you know.
My wife also says that, too.
We had a Davit voiced.
Davit voiced.
Down at Quilsey might get some of, might be of utility for the people down there that are launching like sailboats and things.
Yeah, just.
It would be.
That'd be a hard one to do, because it's just such a steep marina where you put the hoist. I mean, Davit hoist at Point Hudson on the Sea Marine dock would be brilliant.
It really would.
That's where we get Davit hoist if we're gonna invest. I just don't know physically we could do it in Quilsey, because it's.
A Davit hoist, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, remember when the Davit hoist was right here in the commercial basin, and I could pull in the Redhead and pull off my fish station and put on my dive ladder and change it from a fish boat to a dive boat in 15 minutes and then go.
Where was the Davit hoist?
It was right.
On that net float ramp?
No, halfway between the bulletin board and the yacht club on the street right there. And you could back
ramp,
your truck.
That ramp that sticks out?
Mm-hmm. You can back your truck on that ramp.
Yeah.
And then you could pick up whatever's in the truck and just put it right on the boat. It was so handy. That was priceless.
But that's rotten now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at that one time because everyone said it was rotten, so I went and looked at it. That looks fine. I think what was rotten was the hoist was all rusty and cracking. But
Chris could probably build that thing in a heartbeat.
It'll steal.
Pay him overtime for a weekend.
Get a permit to do that again.
That's why you build it on Sunday.
Good. Well, I think we've got some direction. Obviously, we owe you some numbers now and putting things in perspective, but I think we have some direction where we need to go. I really want to thank staff. Staff has done a great job. Put a lot of time and thought into this. Okay.
Nice to take things off of here.
Are you talking about this?
No.
Not now?
No. Regular business.
Okay. If we have 5 minutes, do we have 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. I see Laura goes down here in the audience, and I need to call her back for the regular meeting. And if she wants to talk about the thing that they're doing for the transporting of food, and I wonder if you can give her 5 minutes for that.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Laura Guth. I'm a volunteer with the Department of Emergency Management, and I am the County Aviation Coordinator. So what we're doing, there is, real quick background, there's an organization called the West Coast General Aviation Response Plan that takes in California, Washington, Idaho has now joined. The idea is in the event of a major emergency, such as a Cascadia, then the general aviation pilots would step up, volunteer their aircraft and their time to fly stuff in, fly stuff out, whatever is necessary. We know the state has admitted that if we have that type of a major event, we're 30 days on our own out here. They just can't get to us. They're not their first priority, which makes sense. So to be able to use that capability, we exercise it. We have 4 exercises a year. And this quarter, September 21st, we are lucky enough that we're going to, Jefferson County is going to be the recipient aircraft. We're receiving airport. So we're going to have aircraft flying in with, right now the estimate is up to 2,000 pounds of food that will be delivered, food and goods that are being donated throughout various counties in Washington, Idaho, California. We will deliver that to our food bank, and our pilots get a chance to practice. This is the first time that our DART pilots will be standing up. They'll fly up, pick up gear, bring it back. Mainly we'll be exercising our DART teams and how to operate around aircraft. These are all volunteers. Most of them are not aviators. So they just recognize that there's a need to be able to get stuff in and out. So in a nutshell, that's what we're doing.
So you're with the Jefferson County
Emergency
Team?
Yes.
And so I was very well acquainted with Bob Hamlin. So there's new people there now. Who's in Bob's spot?
Willie Bentz is our Director of Emergency Management now.
Mm-hmm. And so Now, so the people that are doing this flying are working, are Jefferson County residents that are working?
The Jefferson County pilots who are flying from Jefferson County up to Bellingham, those are pilots here. They're Jefferson County Pilots Association is the umbrella organization for them. But we also have pilots from Clallam County is going to be sending some, Kitsap County is going to be sending some. I believe Island County has a couple. Then the Washington Pilot Association is going to be filling in with a few pilots. California is sending one up to watch the operation, and I think Idaho now would like to come out and take a look and see how it works. This is the first time that it has been done. This operation has been done at a small airport. We're usually done at tower-controlled airports, which of course we're not, so it's going to be interesting.
That was my next question. So since we don't have a tower or control like that, how is this being coordinated? Is it out of the emergency office over there by the sheriff's department?
We are working, I'm sitting right here right now writing the ops plan, but safety is obviously our number one concern. We know what the impact would be if something goes wrong. So the discussions and what we're setting in motion are things such as pilots departing from Bellingham, which is our main collection point. We're looking at their time en route so that we can stagger arrivals as they get here. Because we cannot close the airport, we're going to be using the normal traffic frequencies and normal pilot procedures for coming in and out. It's just we were also getting radio communications with the operations using the corn dog, the mobile radio, emergency radio system that we have.
That trailer?
Yes. So they'll be using that, and we're going to be right next to each other. So we will be talking to the pilots, talking to the operations in Bellingham and wherever, and being able to relay the information. The idea is we will control traffic. We will have no more than two aircraft at the tents to be loaded, unloaded at any one time. And we'll use as much common sense as necessary.
So you're going to have a physical presence at the airport.
Absolutely.
And they're in that whole trailer that's doing its radio set.
Absolutely.
Tents out too. We're going to tents out between the goose.
Yeah, and I'll also be issuing a notam too, to warn pilots.
As well as putting out a message on the AWOS, so that pilots inbound will know, just normal pilots will understand there's something going on. Just keep an extra eye out for it.
And all this food is going to the food bank?
To the food bank,
2,000
yes.
pounds of food to our food bank, which is great.
Yeah. And so you've got volunteers from the community that are not pilots that are actually going to be distributing food to the food banks, right?
Well, the food bank is going to be sending a truck and trailer, a truck over to pick up the goods. So the operation, the way it'll work, airplane gets loaded, they fly into Jefferson County, they taxi over to the tents we have set up, we will unload the aircraft, then the pilots will move and to the ramp area either to refuel and take off, or if they're going to have lunch or whatever. At that point, they're finished with the exercise. The food will be stored under the tent until about 3 o'clock is when we anticipate completing. The food bank will be sending over, they have a person who's already volunteered to bring their truck and trailer over. We'll load it onto the trailer, and the food bank wants to take all the food back to their Port Hatlock facility, and they'll distribute it from there.
Right. So you're going to set these tents up where between the Spruce Goose
Port Townsend.
Yeah, we've coordinated with her. We've met with Laura twice, three times actually, and she's got drawings of where she's going to put everything. It's fine. It's out of the path.
Look, is everybody going to be ADS-B? All your planes?
Not necessarily. No, it all depends on who shows up, and again, with so many different players coming in, we cannot guarantee that.
How are they going to deal with Whitby?
You can't be using acronyms around that's non-pilot. Sorry.
It's
automatic dependent surveillance.
So you're thinking, so as you have planes coming like from Bellingham,
right?
They'll fly around.
Right, they'll fly up and around, just like our pilots will fly up and around to get to Bellingham. California guys are going to be coming up through, if they're going through planning a landing at Bremerton, and then from Bremerton they'll go around.
But if you had an ADS-B plane that wanted to go through Whitby, that's fine too.
That's however the pilot wants to. That's the pilot's responsibility is to get themselves cleared through just like they would normally. The only difference between this exercise, and that is really the only real difference between this exercise and what would actually happen in an emergency. In an emergency, we will be coordinating with the state to get pilots pilots cleared through, those pilots that have signed up for this program. Because what the state does not want to have is just mass people just flying through. As you're well aware, they'll throw up restricted areas as soon as something happens. This will get pilots to that restricted area.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the time. And any questions you have, anything comes up, you say, I'll be getting the report to you here shortly. The ops plan to you shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
ASB is only 3 months away.
And Bill, that's the thing that I was talking to you about, the AWAS recording.
Anything else?
We only got 20 more minutes before the other meeting starts, so you want to adjourn this and go have dinner,
whatever the
case. Snack.
Thank you for humoring me and moving this to 4 o'clock. I appreciate it. 101 was terrible coming back from Olympia.
We should take a break. We can't really start the other meeting earlier.
Okay.
We might be coming here and getting it by 5:30.
Workshop is broken.